Hi, I'm Pooja Disha Bharwani, founder and chief storyteller at What's the Story, a boutique communications consultancy based in Singapore. I love hearing, telling, and writing stories for individuals and businesses.
And my name is Kevin McSpadden. I'm the editor at E27. We are a media company covering startups and what they're up to in Southeast Asia.
On The Story of You, we want to offer a human and real conversation on how people succeed and overcome difficulties in the 21st century. Technology has changed the way we work and the ability for us to do things.
In this podcast, we bring you stories from successful individuals in Asia in a dynamic, engaging, and thought-provoking way.
Welcome to episode 2 of The Story of You on E27. Today we're speaking to Kay Vassy, founder of Mesh Minds. Kay is an impact investor that aims to bridge the gap between artists and technology by creating technology for good. I think we should let her explain this. Welcome to the show, Kay. Can you tell us what is your vision with Mesh Minds?
So we have worked with over 20 homegrown artists and technologists covering virtual reality, augmented reality, 3D printing and Internet of Things. And we have asked them to work on projects and prototypes that drive the sustainable development of people on our planet.
What's the planet part of that?
The planet part. So, for example, if any of the artists wanted to look at ways that we can drive awareness of sustainability initiatives, maybe we need to have less plastic in our oceans. Maybe we need to be very clear about the danger of the rising sea levels. Maybe we need to think about coral bleaching. Those are the kinds of things that on the sustainability side of things that some of the artists have addressed.
And I'm going to jump in again. You just opened this weekend at the Art Science Museum. Maybe we can get a concrete example of some of the cool stuff the artists brought to the table. Off mic, you were mentioning virtual reality, augmented reality. Maybe dive into that so our listeners can get kind of visualize what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, when I tried out the oceans we make, this is done by a couple of VR artists, and they work with Warrior 9. You sit down, and it's at the beginning, it's quite fun, right? You have a pair of hands, you've got your headset on, you've got a pair of hands, and then they ask you to reach out and try and grab the bits of plastic that are around you. You know, you're already in, under the sea, so, you know, it's also quite exciting. And you're like, this is quite fun, actually. Then what really starts to overwhelm you, and it actually moved me to tears, was you realize that it's just such an enormous game. You will never, ever be able to finish this game. And it's incredibly overwhelming to be then surrounded by all of the plastic. And they, you know, Abby said to me, you know, he did go one step further and, you know, he had a lot more kind of dead fish in the sea and stuff, but he kind of scaled it back because even when he was testing, it was people on his team who hadn't seen it before. They were also incredibly moved and it was a little bit too much. So it's very fine line with VR because it can be so immersive and so gets to you, the heart of you. Mm. So you have to be very careful about people's emotions, and it needed to be recalibrated for an audience of all children and, you know, adults as well.
But sometimes do you feel like when you describe this, like you said, like you exaggerated the situation just to get the message across, and you can do that with more so with VR and art.
Absolutely, and because it's volumetric, it feels like you're really in there. You know, I must say, when they drop you into the ocean, I held my breath. it's so real. And you know, we can obviously talk endlessly about, you know, all the plastic in the oceans, and, you know, but when you experience it for yourself, you are the diver. You see it all around you, like, wow, my goodness. And then when they pluck you back out, there's quite a famous image that's been going around on the internet recently of like this really loads of plastic just floating in the sea. And then you suddenly kind of, you're rising up above it. And it's like, wow, it really touches you way more than if you just hear about it. Or even if you just see it as a video, you know, on a 2D screen.
I did a VR thing like 2 years ago, and this is 2 years of technology that's improved, and I went under a VR table, and I actually didn't stand up because I was like, if I stand up, I'm going to hit the back of my head on the table. So I backed out and stood up like I would, but obviously it didn't even. So I understand what you're talking about in terms of jumping people right into the real life. The plastic one, I can see that being overwhelming.
Yeah, and also, you know, we yesterday was quite funny. We had people kind of almost tipping forward on their toes. So Debbie Ding has looked at the importance of memories, and she documented dreams when she woke up after over 5 years, and she would try to draw out the maps of what she remembered, the locations where she was, and she's recreated that for visitors in VR. But she's created these rooms with steps, with plants in, you know, and you be basically using your thumb, you just press down and you teleport into each of these 10 rooms that she remembers. And people are actually falling forward on their toes when standing at the top of the stairs. It's quite amazing, it really is.
How good is the digital literacy of artists? And do you feel that sometimes they resist this whole digital embracing of technology because they want to hold on to their traditional skill?
Well, out of the guys that we worked with, you know, some of them had some technology background, but the messaging is always that, you know, we're not trying to stamp out traditional art. We're not trying to say that digital art is better than traditional art. We're actually saying, take those traditional skills, nurture those. It's so important. And then use technology to push the boundaries of your artistic medium. You cannot draw well in virtual reality if you can't draw well with pen and paper. It's just a simple fact.
How do you draw in virtual reality?
You have to first think about, rather than having the piece of paper as your canvas, the whole world around you is your canvas. So you can reach up really high to the sky, you can reach up behind you all the way around. So you have to look at, you know, instead of just perhaps doing the front of someone's face, for example, you've got to remember to do the back of that person's head. Mm. Right? So because when the spectator camera comes round, which is a virtual camera that basically you set it to be wherever it is in your space, it just pans round your drawing. So you have to think about all of every single aspect of your drawing. But the cool thing is that you can also start to hide things within your drawing. So Andre Wee, when he's playing around with it for the very first time, he just did this crazy scribble drawing that only as it panned round to you, it suddenly revealed the hidden face. The other thing that you can do is you could, for example, do a crazy dragon. You can animate the fire coming out of the dragon's mouth instantly just by pulling the trigger. But then also, you can go and stand inside that dragon's head.
Oh, wow. You're like the lion dancers.
Correct.
What you just described, like, it's so nice. It's so Asian. And I read that, you know, you talked about this whole thing about creating Asian art content. You know, tell me a bit about, was that part of the inspiration of starting Mesh Minds?
Well, I'm half Singaporean, half English, right? And I've lived in both West and East. And through being a technology lawyer, I noticed that lots of these technology companies are actually investing heavily in these creative in residence programs. Facebook has one, Google has one, Adobe has one, Autodesk has one. And, you know, I realized that ultimately people in Asia, there's a huge trend towards having local content. So even Disney is investing heavily in localizing their content. Yes, people are still interested in Mickey Mouse, but it's better to have Mickey Mouse in Shanghai for China, or you know, Mickey Mouse drinking a cup of coffee in Singapore rather than, you know, doing all of the Western things that he normally does, for example. So mashing those two things together, I realized that, you know, we need to have the technology companies understanding that now is the time to invest in the Asian artists. Give the Asian artists more opportunities to create hot content now. And then, you know, that's why we therefore need these creative in residence programs to come to Asia. So what better place than to come start in Singapore, where a lot of these companies like Facebook, like Google, have their APAC head office in Singapore. Let's start here, and then from there we grow.
What's the long-term goal of an artist when they're making sort of a VR installation? What's the step that comes after this art week?
So we would love to do more creative innovation labs. Now that the, you know, the format will always be the same. Bring artists together with technologists, and we're not limited to the four technologies that we've done this time. Next time we might do AI. Next time we might look at blockchain, all of these different things, right? So artists plus technologists, then the full good angle in each of the projects, and a venue to sponsor it, and the technology partners as well. From there, you can then put a creative innovation lab anywhere, as long as you have the venue to showcase at the end. So I'd not want to give more opportunities to artists to try out new technologies. Again, push the boundaries of their artistic medium. Experiment. What can I do with my really cool creative skill? And how can I use technology to maybe communicate to a global audience? Find others who are similar to me. Raise awareness, because we're all very, you know, we want to look at, for example, plastic in the oceans, or, you know, the rainforest, or whatever it is. you can use technology to connect with other people, you know, and really get the word out there more than if you're just sitting there in your studio on your own. So I want to have more opportunities for artists, and I want to work with more technology companies to bring more of these creative in residence programs to Asia.
And I bet you there's an interesting collision between the hyper creativity of the artists and the stereotypical logic of the technologists.
You're absolutely right.
They come together and they clash. That's a good thing, though. I appreciate when the creativity and logic pull each other towards the middle, I guess.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorite stories is when Dawn Ang was working directly with Tek Lee Tan, who is a senior technical artist, but he's also an amazing Unity developer. Unity is a software that's, they used it for Pokemon Go, for example, very famous. You know, Dawn was just sitting there, and accidentally Tek leaned forward on the mouse and put the sea level in Dawn's landscape too high and made all of her kind of mountains and stuff float in the sea. But that was a massively happy accident, because Dawn is all about trying to improve stress reduction, calming, you know, so you put the headset on, you put her headphones on, and you just sit back and relax. You can't tell you the number of people who look like they've completely passed out in the exhibition just for those few minutes. So together, you know, they were just sitting there experimenting, pushing things around, and actually then the happy accident came. So, you know, it's that wonderful kind of, exactly as you say, that collision of, you know, well, I'm the artist and I'm the technologist, I know how to do all the programming, but then together they kind of created something wonderful.
So this thing that you know, your vision, like you say, of them coming together and sometimes being at odds, that works, the magic happens. So now that it's all happening right now, was it what you expected?
I think it's been more, actually. You know what has been really amazing is working with the LaSalle students. You know, those kids have gone to town. One of them even wrote a 40-page booklet about the whole MeshMinds experience and how, you know, he was just a design communication student who was probably just going to go into graphic design, you know, in some fashion after graduating, and now really wants to create in VR. But more than that, he also is very interested in music, and he wants to take that to the next level and think about music festivals and virtual reality and, you know, all of these amazing experiences that you can mash together, because when you create in Tilt Brush, the animation can, it moves in the same time as the music. So it's actually it can become a very nice experience.
Yeah, there's an interesting industry around, as VR grows, the side industry that's almost more active is not the hardware, but the content for the hardware.
That's absolutely right. And, you know, Lenovo are coming out with their mixed reality device. They're one of 5 technology companies this year launching. And they said, we already want to work with you again because we just don't have any content. No one is going to buy this hardware without anything on it.
Yeah, I've tried the HTC Vive before and it's cool, but I was like, what am I going to do with this?
Correct.
What's your main takeaway from kind of kickstarting this and launching it for the first time?
Next time, because, you know, this was the first time, so we had to, and because time is relatively short, we had to hand pick the artists. What I would like to do next time is do an open call. I think then we have artists who very clearly have an idea of what they already want to do, whereas it was sometimes a little bit hard going in terms of working with the artists that we selected, because they have, lots of them have full-time jobs. This is a major issue in Singapore, and which is different from, you know, other places like London, Berlin, where a lot of professional artists are able to self-sustain easier. They don't have crazy, stupid high rents to pay and all that stuff. Singapore cost of living is very, very high. So it's not easy to find professional artists who are, you know, just have lots of time and, like, available. And yes, I can commit to your project. It's like, oh no, I'm actually also a lecturer. I'm also, you know, working at the Sustainable Living Lab. I'm also doing 10 million other things. So everyone is very time poor. And that's sometimes, in a way, it's reflected, you know, by the fact that the LaSalle students, because they've had more time to dedicate to the MeshMinds project, some of their stuff really shines, whereas, you know, some of the professional artist stuff is still a little bit experimental and, you know, it breaks and we have to fix it again and, you know. But that's also the joy of technology, right? We're here not to show an absolutely polished showcase where everything works and it's all just at the touch of a button. We're here to show the limitations of technology, and yes, it breaks.
Can I jump in here? Because, this, you know, what you said about artists and here in Singapore have other jobs. And I think that's a very strong statement, because in Asia, if I told my dad, let's say I wanted to be an artist, he'll be like, no, you need to get a real job first. And so has the time actually come for art to be a sustainable, viable job because of technology?
I absolutely hope so, right? That is what, I mean, personally, that's my own experience as well. I was told very categorically by my Chinese mother that they are not allowed to pursue art from GCSE level, right? So, and even though I was like one of the best in the class at ceramics, I was not allowed to do it. I've ended up as a technology lawyer, okay, yes, but I have this kind of burning art, you know, creativity inside me. And I think that's true of a lot of people in Singapore as well. I'm sure you will find, you know, concert pianist level, you know, lawyers, for example, yeah. And, you know, but or amazing like DJs who are like bankers. You know, there's lots of opportunities like that where, unfortunately, you know, your job dictates that, yes, you spend most of your time looking at a screen and you don't really have much time for the amazing creative pursuit that you used to do at university, school level, whatever it is. But, you know, I think we're all inherently creative, and therefore using technology, sometimes we can maybe reignite that creative yeah. spirit. You know, I can see a lot from yesterday. One of the designers who works at Facebook said, you know, I'm actually really, really, you know, I haven't done my drawing in ages, and just coming here today, doing that VR tilt brush, which I've never done before, it's reignited that passion in me to go back and do my drawing.
Can we discuss impact investing for a little bit? One of the critiques of the industry as a whole is that how does the do-good work with the need to make financial returns and how it operates, and maybe your response on the critique that I just posited.
So as you know, impact investing is less focused on the financial ROI and more about the actual impact that it has had. So, you know, how do you measure that impact? Not necessarily so easy, but we want to make sure we get the feedback from people who have done the virtual reality Oceans We Make experience and really start to think, you know, did it have an impact in terms of telling people, yeah, maybe I should, you know, use less plastic, so on and so forth, right? We're not a research agency, but what I can do is point to research that is being done, for example, by Stanford. So Stanford have this experience where you put on your VR headset, you have your two controllers and they have haptic feedback. You have a chainsaw in your hand. You have 2 minutes to chop down as many trees as you possibly can, right? Then they sit you down and they interview you. And whilst the interview is going on, they accidentally spill a glass of water all over the table. They then offer you some tissues. Did you know that there is a huge decrease in the number of tissues used by the people who have done the VR experience? Just because they're just thinking
they chopped down
about
the trees.
The environment and what they've wow. just done. Okay. It's come into your brain. It's in that subliminal messaging. It is so strong. So I'm not necessarily needing to do all this research on each of these artists' projects and stuff. I already know that they have a strong impact, and I already know that the message they want to get across. So that's a big tick for me. The other thing is that there can be a return on investment, right? So the money goes in, the artwork is created, but then what I will then do for each of these artists and say, if we get a commission that says, okay, Oceans We Make, you know, the Tech Museum of Innovation would like to install it at the Tech for a certain amount of time, we then act as almost like a artist representation agency / gallery, and we say, could we take a 20% commission on that commission?
Mm.
So, you know, we've brought you this amazing opportunity to then show your work elsewhere, but can you kind of just help us out? You know, money that comes in will then go back to creating more opportunities for more artists to create using technology, so on and so forth.
There are a lot of people now in the last few years, it feels like, who want to take their money and do good with it, but for various reasons might be hesitant about NGOs or charities and are interested in impact investing. That's part of why I was asking, and I'm kind of interested in, from your perspective, why the advantages of taking your money that way instead of just starting an NGO and doing the art science and then going home. What are some tangible reasons to do impact investing over charity? Or is there?
I suppose they're fairly similar, but I mean, just a straight charity is not necessarily incubating artists, providing new opportunities. So every single impact investment, you need to think carefully, like, what does this mean to me? It's not normally quite possible to just go out and find a kind of, you know, commercial for-profit company that's absolutely aligned with interests that you have. If you are motivated by saving the planet, for example, and, you know, the particular aspect is the orangutans, is it so easy to find a charity that does that? Maybe, but would you want to work with an impact investor who is perhaps working with an artist to then make an experience that can then be shared globally that raises the awareness of the plight of the orangutans. That's the kind of difference. You know, in the charity version, your money is kind of going to making sure that the orangutans, you know, have a sanctuary, that the ecotourism aspect is kind of dealt with. What we're doing is we're just saying, you know, we can, it's a messaging platform, potentially, bring together these artists and technologists. Artists are the ones that I feel are most well-placed in the world to help people communicate ideas, whether that's visually, whether that's, you know, just in the messaging, the way that they think, creative people think, is they kind of take maybe a difficult message and try to simplify it, or have a kind of like wonderful visual representation of colours and you know, using different palettes to get that message across.
So that's exactly it. I mean, taking the messaging and getting it across, but again, through the artists. And I think when you want to invest, it's got to be people who believe in that.
Yes.
And I think that sometimes might be hard for people to convince, because they want to see tangibly where the money is going, right? So do you, you know, has that been a problem for you in convincing people? Because it's a small group of people who actually think that this can make a difference.
That's right. But I mean, if you look at trends towards corporate social responsibility, I mean, that was never around, like, I mean, 20 years ago, maybe, right? You know, and now it's seeming every company has some CSR agenda. Now, whether that is we are championing diversity in the workplace, or you know, we're trying to save the planet. You know, we're also about, don't forget, it's not just all about sustainable development of the planet. We're also about sustainable development of people and the way that we are, you know, we interact together. Yes, maybe we need to get more women in technology. Maybe we need to get more, you know, differently abled people back into the workforce. Perhaps we can use technology to do all these different things. Right?
You seem to be an environmentalist. Based on this conversation, what's one small thing that the listener can do starting now to help our, personally, my opinion, dire situation?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. It is absolutely dire. At a very simple level, try not to buy bottled water, plastics, all that kind of stuff. But also we need to start, you know, campaigning more for more recycling banks. Make sure that education is really key. So, you know, if you have kids, always talking to them about, you know, how precious our planet is. Don't just drop litter. Don't just, you know, be horrible to animals or whatever. You know, just be respectful. Be respectful of everyone on the planet and each other. And, you know, we have a global role to play. We don't just think about it only at what you can do, but also how you can feed into the wider picture. There's a lot of, you know, memes going around put out by the World Economic Forum, little videos teaching people. So educate yourself. There's so much information out there. And then choose which aspect you think is important and go after that. There's no point me trying to endlessly talk to someone about plastic in the oceans when they much prefer thinking about the orangutans. You know, it's something that's very personal to you. But please, yes, think about the planet and think about how much damage we are doing and how to try to, you know, in any small way, be an activist and show that you care.
Okay, now we get into the rapid fire round. Oil painting or digital painting?
Oil painting.
Real art or virtual art?
Virtual art.
But what is real art?
Yeah, exactly.
That is the question.
Bitcoin or cash?
Bitcoin.
Why? We always ask the follow-up on that one. Yeah. Just because everyone has their...
It's so hot now, so like, we need to know the thought process.
Yeah.
Everybody's into crypto. Crypto kitties. Ridiculous. I don't know why. You know, look, my husband is big into it, and he seems to be very bullish on where it's all going. It's quite an interesting landscape to be navigating right now, I suppose.
Alexa or Google Home?
Ha, Google Home. Has to be. My husband works for Google.
Instagram or Facebook?
Instagram.
I just want to ask what your favorite medium is.
Favorite medium?
Yeah.
Ceramics, in terms of arts.
Yeah.
So, and you were allowed to do that only till...
16.
Awesome. And then have you got back to it?
I have. I've tried. I've really tried. So I went for a 5-week course at Central St. Martin's. I've done a round of like weekend things here and there. But yeah, I've just realised that it's maybe a bit too late for me and I'm just too busy. But maybe when I'm like 60 or something, I'll have my own little ceramic studio.
That's the dream.
Yeah.
Art or law?
Oh, art. Every time.
All right. I think that's it for us. Thank you, Kay, for joining us. We very much appreciate your time, and it was wonderful learning about digital art, virtual reality, impact investing, and saving the environment.
Yeah, thank you, Kay. And I think, you know, this episode really brought together art, purpose, and technology.